Back to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us for our second hour on this Tuesday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name. S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I will share it with the people unless you don't want me to. And of course, I won't do that. Coming up in our second hour, a little bit later, we'll be joined by Bathsheba Smithen. She is co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment. She's an educator, recording artist, and motivational speaker, talking about accepting self. Well, these young ladies, Bathsheba and Khadijah, come up with really important, vital topics each and every week. So I'm looking forward to that conversation, as I always do during Dual Inspiration. But before we get to the spiritual, we got to go to film. And for that, our friend Eric Hatch is back. He's director of programming of the Maryland Film Festival. Eric, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Of course. And you come to talk about the classic Senegalese film, 1966, Black Girl, that is going to be airing at the Parkway coming up.
It's this Thursday, 7:30 p.m. at the Parkway, which is at the corner of Charles and North.
Okay. Let's talk about Black Girl. First of all, again, kudos. Man, you guys showed a documentary about the only people to go down during the financial crisis. It was a Chinese immigrant family.
Oh, Abacus, yeah.
I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. I tried, but I couldn't. I got twisted up that weekend, and I couldn't, or those few days, and I couldn't get down there. But I make the point only to say that kudos to you all for I mean, this is a treat to see, to have these great films being brought to us on a regular basis, as opposed to having to wait until the Maryland Film Festival comes around every year. So before we even get to Black Girl, talk to the listeners. Remind the listeners of the mission of the Maryland Film Festival, which has expanded, obviously, with the opening of the Parkway Theater. But remind the listeners of our show of the mission of the Maryland Film Festival shows, I mean, with movies like, showing movies like Black Girl.
Yeah, so Maryland Film Festival has been around since 1999, and our motto is film for everyone. And what that means in practice is we're trying to identify films that have great cultural value but might not otherwise come to Baltimore. Films that might not be seen as commercial blockbusters, but come from exciting voices, generally diverse voices, and we think people in Baltimore should be seeing them. And in the past, our primary vehicle for that was the annual Maryland Film Festival in May. But, you know, as of this May, we have now the year-round Parkway Theater. That's at the corner of Charles and North. It's a historic auditorium from 1915 that we've restored and added two more screens. So we've got three screens running every day of the year, and you know, films like Abacus, special screenings like the free screening of Black Girl, are things that, you know, quite likely would not happen in Baltimore otherwise. But as a nonprofit, we can sort of stick our neck out and say, this is worth doing. We hope people are going to come out, but either way, we're doing it.
So before we even get to the synopsis of Black Girl, let's talk about the filmmaker. Asumani, pronounce the last name for me.
Semben.
Semben.
Yeah.
All right, I was going to hack it up.
Well, for years I said Sembene, so I just corrected myself recently.
Semben. Asumani Semben, one of the greatest filmmakers, most groundbreaking filmmakers ever, really. perhaps the most renowned African director of the 20th century, arguable, but he's obviously in consideration in upper echelon of filmmakers, international filmmakers of the 20th century. Let's talk about him, Asumani Sembin, as you corrected. And Black Girl was his first film.
Yeah, so Black Girl was his first...
First feature
film, yeah. And I think it's Usman Sembin,
if I
have it correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was born in Senegal in the 20s, and he first made his mark in literature. He was a novelist for most of his life, but that was his primary undertaking in the 50s and 60s. He had emigrated, actually I think stowed away to France in the 40s, became very politicized as he worked in factories and in the docks, got very into unions and anti-war movements, particularly the French occupation of Vietnam prior to U.S. involvement was something he was really opposed to. So he started writing novels about his experiences. I haven't read it. I would love to. God's Bits of Wood is his masterpiece, apparently a film from the a novel from the 60s. Film is how I know him, and he sort of had an epiphany in the 60s as sort of Italian neorealist films and French New Wave films were breaking the rules, being made on smaller budgets, casting non-professional actors. Sort of had an epiphany that he could do this too, and that with literature, as much as it was his passion, he was kind of reaching primarily a cultural elite. But if he made movies, his films could be seen much more by the people, could cross language barriers and national barriers much more easily than his novels did. So his first short film, The Wagoner, or Barome Sarat, from 1963, is actually considered the first film made in Africa by a Black African director. It's a 20-minute short that's a portrait of poverty and sort of the economic fallout that occurred in some African nations as the colonial ties were broken, basically. Right. So there's strong metaphors and strong political currents through most of his work. But we come in with Black Girl, his first feature, 1966, which Black Girl also is sort of a metaphor for colonialism. It's a young Senegalese woman who is taken in as basically a maid by a white French couple. And they bring her back to France, where she lives and becomes quite miserable. And she's treated very paternalistically by them, and sort of has an awakening of the racism, the class, the privilege that's sort of embedded in their attitude towards her. So it's a drama and a bit of a tragic story as well. A very beautiful film, and it really put African film on the map. Like Usman Sembin is considered the father of African film, and both his body of work and then the explosion of films that followed really sort of begin here.
Interesting. Can you – now, we nailed down Usman Sembin.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to give you the actress.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to help you there.
Yeah. Wow. Mbassine Teresa Diop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diop, I'm sure on. But the rest, okay. You know, we might need some help from listeners.
Yeah. Obviously, from what I've read, the research I've done, a miraculous performance by her in this film. Why now? Why did you all decide to bring it forward now?
Well, it's in keeping with the free film series that we've been doing that started last week with Daughters of the Dust. You were out of town, or you were on a staycation,
yes,
or
whatever I was doing. But yeah. I didn't know Daughters of the Dust was out.
Yeah.
Too.
Wow. So we showed Daughters of the Dust last week and had an amazing turnout, 300 people, which was beautiful. Hoping for a similar turnout this Thursday for Black Girl. But basically what we're doing is offering free screenings of films that are landmarks in different ways, and we're trying to rewrite or reimagine what repertory cinema can look like. Often when the history of cinema is showcased, it's the same films over and over again, Citizen Kane. I mean, wonderful films, but iconic films that are readily available. And I'd like to see diversity be showcased more in that, and a global view be showcased more.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. I'm in the studio with one of our friends from the Maryland Film Festival. Eric Hatch is director of programming for the Maryland Film Festival. We're talking about the film Black Girl, which is going to be screened on Thursday night at the Parkway Theater. The film is the first feature film, the brilliant first feature film of Ousmane Sembène, the transcendent African filmmaker, one of the greatest filmmakers, period, of the 20th century, and certainly considered by many the father of African film, at least modern African film. I don't know a lot about this film, and I'm hoping. What time does it start?
7:30 on Thursday. Yeah.
If I torch out of here, if I run out of here, yeah. I might be able to make it.
Maybe I can hold it a few minutes for you.
That would be great because I really want to see it. You know, Eric, as lovers of film, you and I, we know the power, the political power, the cultural power that film holds. What do you think showing Black Girl, this film that talks about colonial France or colonialism in Europe, and the relationship to racism in a city like Baltimore, so segregated and having its own issues and as far as race and culture and class is concerned, what's the message that we're getting here? Showing Black Girl, I can't wait to see it, but I get a sense of this isn't just a film for the love of film. This is a statement.
Yeah, and it's a statement. Hopefully, that extends to the Parkway's programming at large, which is, you know, to the degree that it's in our control, let's not be segregated. You know, let's come together and find movies that are of common interest. Let's see them. Let's have interesting discussions about them. And I mean, I think that is sort of inherently political. You know, I think the neighborhood Station North, because of its history, because of the neighborhoods, that neighborhood itself and the neighborhoods that surround it, because of its central location, is sort of becoming Baltimore's own melting pot. You know, it's, you know, the music venues there tend to be spanning all genres and draw very diverse crowds. And that's really what I want the Parkway to be, too. I don't want it to be just another movie theater.
That's interesting, because I think that, you know, we both love music. And as a kid who grew up going to Odell's back in the early 1980s, you know, that was a club that was mostly a black music club. But right in the area, there were a lot of different clubs for a lot of different influences, and everybody kind of partied together.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was always a place that, you know, there was a lot. It's interesting how things just.
I think it's happening
come back
again.
Around.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to the Wind Up Space or the Crown in those neighborhoods, it's happening again. You know, whether it's the dance parties or whether it's, you know, a live performance, the artists are diverse. They span all genres and so do the crowds, and it's really beautiful.
You know, it may be even actually more diverse than when I first started hanging out in that area, because you just mentioned the Wind Up Space, and then you have Red Emma's.
Red Emma's, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, so there's a lot of powerful energy going on in that community, in that area, that neighborhood, and Parkway is contributing to that, and that's a beautiful thing. Please warn. What are the films are you guys going to sneak? Not sneak in here, but what's coming up? Can you talk about some of the stuff that may be coming up soon, so I can mark it on my schedule.
Sure.
So I make sure that I get down there and see these films. I still want to talk about Black Girl, but I just that jumped out at me.
Absolutely. I mean, this week alone, we have a lot of special events. Let's see, Tuesday night, which is tomorrow, there's the Baltimore premiere of local filmmaker Stephanie Barber's film In the Jungle. That's a special screening, 7 p.m. tomorrow. And then very different than the other films we discussed, but one I think everyone will know, Wednesday at 9 p.m., we're showing The Shining on a 35mm print.
Wow.
So if it's been a while since you've seen that on the big screen, or if you've never seen it on the big screen, that's one you want to come out for as well. But we actually have a lot more. You know, the Black Girl screening, again, is free this Thursday at 7:30. And then during Artscape, we're going to be showing free films as well. This is a tradition that we've had at Artscape where we program free short films Saturday and Sunday during Artscape. And these are us bringing back to town some of the short films that we showed during the annual festival in May. So July 21st to 23rd, if you come by the Parkway, 12 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. We'll have air conditioning, refreshment, and some free movies.
Excellent. Now, The Shining on a big screen.
Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick.
Yep.
That would be. I'm trying to think that I don't think I saw The Shining in the theater when I was a kid.
I think 1980. I was six, so that yeah. I'm, my parents probably made the right decision on that.
Yeah,
one.
I didn't see that one either. But I mean, it must have been. It's probably amazing to see you on a big screen.
Yeah, I mean. Kubrick in all his films, you know, the facial expressions, close-ups are extremely important, and Jack Nicholson in this maybe most of all. So, yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I remember the scene of the snowy, the wintry menagerie as the kids running
yep.
through that. That's
yeah, you can't forget that.
No,
yeah.
no. So let's go back to Black Girl for a minute. How do you think that film by Sembin informed American filmmakers like? Marvin Van Peebles, and then later, of course, Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know the distribution of this film specifically, but I know that, like, Melvin Van Peebles was an attendee of film festivals, and he also actually went to Europe to make his first feature. He had a similar path. In France in the 60s, if you could get a novel published, there was government money that subsidized screenplay and film development of that into a feature. So he knocked on every door in Hollywood and was offered nothing but menial jobs, heard about this program in France, got on a plane, taught himself to write in French, and wrote a novel called Story of a Three-Day Pass, which he then turned into a film. So this path from literature to film was one followed around the African diaspora as well, not just in the case of Ousmane Sembin. But the influence he had more generally, I don't know if the mark was made initially for this film or if this is one that has been discovered more in retrospect, but by the 70s, he was a well-established figure and his films were big events at all the major film festivals in the world. And I know they were inspirational. I had the privilege of seeing him speak before he passed away in 2000. Wow. He passed away in 2007, and I saw him present his last film, Moulade, in 2004. And one thing I was really touched by was Danny Glover was right there by his side at the screening in Toronto.
Wow.
He's a big booster and enthusiast of African film and sort of was there, you know, at the end of Sembin's life for encouragement and to help him get his films out there. Yeah, I mean, I think both this filmmaker and the movements that were happening in general in the 60s sort of rewrote the rules. Hollywood wasn't prioritizing global cinema. They weren't prioritizing diverse voices. When they showcased Africa, it was usually not actually going to Africa, or if it was, it was usually a white filmmaker telling their story. And the tools changed, just as they're changing to a greater degree now. Casting non-professionals, the evolution of cameras allowed people to make films quickly, and you just had an explosion in world cinema that this was part of that is sort of unparalleled.
Well, I mean, if you think about Nigeria and, and the explosion of film coming out of Nigeria over the last several years, obviously, I mean, think about Bollywood.
Yep.
International cinema has literally exploded.
Yeah, I think Hollywood is now reduced to the third most productive industry in the world after Nigeria and India. So it's amazing.
It is amazing, and stories are being told, and people are becoming connected through this great art of film. I just think I know a little bit about Melvin Van Peebles' backstory, and I knew about him traveling to France, and I think both two of his children, I think Megan and Mario, were born either in France or they were small children.
Yeah, that makes
in
sense.
France.
Yeah,
when Melvin was doing his thing, and obviously 3 Day Pass led to Sweet Sweetback.
Yep,
which is a great classic, and one of the forebears, if you will, of the blaxploitation era.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is connected, and it seems like Sembin is the father of a lot of this.
Yeah.
It's a great pleasure that you all are bringing Black Girl to Baltimore and free. So you can't beat that on Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday, 7:30 p.m., Parkway Theater, corner of Charles and North.
Mm-hmm. And really delicious popcorn.
Yeah, thank you.
You make it? You make the popcorn?
Well, you know, it's locally sourced. That's all I can take credit for. That was our suggestion.
Oh, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we say it jokingly, but that's hugely important.
Yeah. Yeah. We're trying with our concession stand to be, you know, we're an alternative venue and we have little ways to signal it like that.
Yeah. And again, Artscape is coming up.
Yes. Artscape is July 21st through 23rd. And, you know, we just have a lot of free content this month. So if you've been, you know, considering checking out the theater, there's no better month than July.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Again, the film that is being shown on Thursday is Black Girl, the film, the first feature film by Senegalese filmmaker Ousmane Sembène, a classic film that was made in 1966. It will be shown at the Parkway Theater on Thursday evening. Eric Hatch is director of programming for the Maryland Film Festival. Eric, thank you, man, for coming in and sharing with us. We appreciate you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you.
Of course. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're winding down a Monday evening. Bathsheba Smithen will be here. The lyricist, educator, and recording artist is co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment. We're going to be talking about accepting self. Important topic, of course. Stay tuned. You are listening to First Edition. Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yose, your host, winding down a Monday evening as we head into the Dual Inspiration segment, and the co-host of Dual Inspiration herself, Bathsheba Smithen, lyricist, educator, recording artist, is with us by phone. Bathsheba, how you doing?
What's going on, Sean? I'm glad to be on here.
Where are you? You sound you sound like you're in a secured location somewhere.
No, I'm working from home today.
All right, understood. The lyrics of the song, our theme song for Dual Inspiration, resonate more clearly tonight than most nights, it seems, Lettucey says, it's all right. That's what this is all about, accepting yourself. It's all right, right?
Right, right. It's absolutely, like, we're going to be talking about accepting yourself, and first you got to become aware of who self is before you can even get to acceptance, right?
Absolutely true.
And when we talk about... Yeah. So when we talk about that awareness, like talking about knowing what gives you joy, what do you need assistance with, and areas of growth you want to hone in on, and even knowing what your trigger points are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I talk about often is the pursuit of mindfulness. And one of the main tenets, one of the seven tenets that I've been taught by Chang'e Bell is acceptance. And that is acceptance of self, acceptance of others, and acceptance of your circumstances. At least that is that way I have adapted it, at least for my own pursuit. So let's talk about that. Identify you. One of the topics that you want to start off with is identifying you, awareness.
Right, and so one of the things that I know about identifying self, it can be very complex, you know. Sometimes we can get caught up in the clutter because we have so many different things going on in our lives, and it's hard. You talk about mindfulness. It takes effort to just get alone, like you were saying in the beginning. I sound like I'm in some secure location. But it takes some time getting to a space where it's secure to just take time on a daily basis to get to know yourself and do some intentional, intensive work to find out more about who you are. It's interesting because we find out, we spend a lot of our time getting to know other people, things, ideas, information, but we don't spend as much time getting to know who we are. And that's where we need to start. We need to carve out time in our schedules to become intimate with ourselves.
You know, that's an important point. Because I don't think, you think that you know yourself, and I feel like over all these years that I've gotten a fair handle on who I am, but maybe the process wouldn't take so long if we were more intensive about it, if we were more focused about it, if we were more concentrated, for lack of a better term, meaning doing specific things to get to reveal the character, the personality, who we are as people, not just on the surface, but really spiritually more than anything else. Let's talk about steps people can take to really begin that process in a more focused, specific way of revealing who we are, as opposed to waiting until you're old like me to understand and be clear on who you are. In some ways, it's a process that has to play itself out anyway. But I think there are specific things that you can do, that people can do, in order to be more proactive, if you will, in that process.
I think it could start off with something as simple as, like, not even going into really deep detail about your history, about your upbringing, but starting off with a question as simple as, what do I want? Mm. You will find that is one of the most difficult questions to ask yourself. And I did that myself, and that's why I'm saying that. When I asked myself that question, it was really hard for me to answer it. And because we don't stop to ask that question, we are in a state of reaction often. We're oftentimes reacting and thinking that we want certain things without asking ourselves, what is it that I really, really want? And that's layered, right? Like, when you start asking yourself that question, you'll start running off this list of things that you say you want initially, but you'll start processing, okay, there's something deeper behind this, and starting with that as a step one.
Well, and so to that point, Bathsheba, I asked myself the other day, it may have been 2 days ago, in the next 10 years, I asked myself, what do you want? And I said specifically, not what do you want to do in the next 10 years based off of what you're doing now, because that's really what the answer tends to be. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things going on right now for me, but that's not the question. The question isn't, what do you want based on what you're doing now, or what you're doing now will lead to. the question has to become, what do you want? And I honestly, when I looked at 10 years down the line, I couldn't really answer the question that well, which is an epiphany for me, quite frankly.
Did you say that last part again, Sean?
I said that I've asked myself a couple of days ago, what do I want in the next 10 years? And I said I didn't want the question to be, or the answer to be, based on what I'm doing now. I didn't want the answer to be, what do I want based on what I'm doing now? Because that is reactionary. I want the answer to, what is it that I really want in the next 10 years?
Right. That's really good. I'm glad you said that, because that helps us segue to the next portion of this and talking about the evolution of self. Right. And when you're going through that list, I think for me, at first, I started off with, goals that I had for my business, just trying to get something out because I didn't know it exactly. But once I started to talk about what I wanted for myself inwardly, then that would help with the process of determining the want for the Bathsheba that's maybe 10 years down the line or 5 years down the line, because when I evolve, I'm not going to be the same self that exists now. If that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Focusing on what I want within myself, and that will help create or answer that question for the things outside of self.
Exactly true. And that comes back to really have an understanding of self, because it's easy to answer the question, or it's less difficult. Let's say that it's less difficult to answer the question, what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? But that's a totally different question from what do I want? What do I want? And that's some work to figure that out, for real.
Yeah, and even if you want to take it on a spiritual level, like if you talk about King Solomon and God asking him what he wanted, like imagine God asking you, what do you want? And not being able to answer that question. I mean, the author of the universe is saying, what do you want? And not being able to answer that question has to be extremely frustrating. And perhaps King Solomon had already processed, like what it was that he felt he needed, because his response was wisdom. And in asking for wisdom, he was able to do a number of different things. And there were things that were added unto him because of what he asked for.
Well, I mean, exactly.
I think he had become aware of it.
Exactly true. I refer back to what Solomon did. Oftentimes, at least I reflect on it. I mean, the fact that he had the wisdom to ask for wisdom, because he knew that wisdom would bring him all the things that he desired. And it did ultimately.
Yeah, so as I said, and as you sit and you ask yourself that question, I would recommend for those listening to give yourself space to allow that to unfold. It doesn't have to happen immediately in that 10, 20, 30 minutes, whatever you allot for yourself during the day. You could do it over a period of time, just allowing that to, as you brainstorm to find that out, it'll help you find out more about you and why you're asking what you're asking. Like what you were saying, Sean, with King Solomon having the wisdom to ask for wisdom, that would speak volumes. If I were Solomon, I would be thinking, that says something about who I am as well and what I've asked for. So, because we're talking about accepting, acceptance and accepting yourself. Once you get through that process in step one, identifying the things that you want, being able to accept that this is where I am, because the answers are going to vary based on the individual. And so if you see that you're asking for a lot of things that are represent the fruit of the Spirit, or you're looking at relationships, then you know that you really value those things that are that are the intangibles. And if you see that that your list is kind of lopsided and you value the tangibles more so than the intangibles, being able to accept this where you are as well.
Exactly true. Lopsided. I mean, fruits of the Spirit versus, fruits of the flesh, or fruits of the the shiny things in life. Well, I can just say it that way, you know. And that has to be a real conversation that you're having with yourself. Because if your list is all about the shiny things, hey man, I'm not going to disparage you, but I mean, I think that eventually, at some point, is going to manifest itself as problematic. I mean, it just always does. It just always has.
Right. And so it's important to note that, because let's say you acquire the thing that you say that you want, or if you decide not to go through this process and you're acquiring some of the things that you think you want, you may get to a place where you can't, you may get to a place where that self that exists right now, it's the same self that exists in the future, but magnified with those materials. And with those materials, because of the person that is only focused on material things, it's going to be, the issues are going to be exacerbated. Mm. So it's just like, you know, who you are, as you get into the limelight or you move on toward, you know, like greater things, you acquire more wealth, who you are is going to be magnified. It's not that you're you weren't that person, you know what I mean, that stepped into that next stage of development with the acquisition of whatever it is you're trying to attain, is that you are now magnified because you have it. People can see more about who you are because you have the things that you've been wanting or that you thought you wanted. So that's why it's important to go through this process and to continue to go through it, so that you can evaluate yourself, so that evolution and that improvement can happen.
Yeah. To that point, Bathsheba, Baltimore native Jada Pinkett, I heard her say this. I don't think it was her original thought necessarily, but I heard her say it. She said, money doesn't change you. But she said, money reveals who you really are.
I think it's hard too, because I'm transitioning into that part about evolution of self. Like, once you have become aware of who you are, then it opens up the possibility for transformation and evolution, such that you won't limit yourself to where you are presently. There's this piece where I say, I don't know if the self that exists today is the same self that existed yesterday, or the I that I proclaim will be the same I to my name retained from the day before. And you should be constantly evolving. And the more you become aware of self, you open up the possibility for you to be transformed to become a higher version of who you are. But if you are not processing that, then how can you measure? Or it's just like, you know, when people benchmark success and they're looking at ways to monitor progress, you do it when you go to the gym. You're looking at how much weight that you've lost. It's the same thing with your spirit, with your mentality. Being able to monitor your progress and seeing, am I evolving in these different areas? And if I'm not evolving, accepting that I'm not evolving because maybe some barriers have gotten into the way, but at least I'm going through this process. So that makes me okay with that. That helps me accept myself, because I have in my mind that I want to do better. And so I am processing this, and I'm able to see, okay, Bathsheba, you're getting stuck, and it's okay. You're stuck. but what are we going to, what's going to happen about this?
Right. Let's take a phone call real quick, Bathsheba. Gene in Pikesville wants to get into the conversation. Gene, you're on with Bathsheba Smith, and how you doing, Gene?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, I'm thinking transcendental, transcendental meditation, things of that sort. But right now, I'm actually working with somebody, and I can't talk about it, you know, specifically in reference to they're doing an e-book about beneficial dreaming. Are you familiar with beneficial dreaming?
I'm not.
Well, it's a concept where you can change your negative way of doing things, basically through dreams. So you can create a scenario, you know, concentrate on it, and change the way things affect you. And the concept is called beneficial dreaming. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting this information out there. Now, I'm even more excited because it sounds as though what you're talking about today is very closely related. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, kind of plug that in. Also, you know, just to chime in that I truly believe that, you know, you can change. I'm blind, and I became blind at 54, and I've completely reinvented my whole life. Just changed it, and, you know, nothing really big, but basically just being able to do what I did before, but finding a different way of doing it. And that's a dilemma that most people who have disabilities find themselves in. And that's the wall that we run into, and we have to figure out how to get around that wall, over that wall, under it. And, you know, and Sean, always, I appreciate the subject matter in which you bring to the audience. And thank you very much again.
Gene, bless you, man. We appreciate you.
Oh, sure.
Fascinating subject that Gene was talking about, actually, the use of dreams in our lives. That is a fascinating subject, actually. But what Gene was talking about, I mean, that is, I would say, the embodiment of self-evolution. I mean, to go through a metamorphosis where one of your senses doesn't work for you anymore. What that forces you to do, as far as change is concerned, must have been incredible, as far as Gene was concerned and anybody else was concerned, with that type of physical change.
Wow! Yeah, that sounds incredible. I do think it sounds like the idea is, you know, with dreams, it's just like with having a vision and I'm comparing it to creating a vision and being able to look at that vision to help with your transformation process. I think that's what, you know, business leaders and other people do for them to be able to evolve.
Absolutely. Being able to bring forward, I mean, spirit talks about, or rather scripture talks about, you know, people without a vision, or they perish for lack of vision. And scripture always talks about make the vision plain, how the vision was downloaded, how it was brought to people, different characters. Without that vision, it's hard for that evolution to take place. But let's get to the final bullet here of the segment this evening, Bathsheba. You know, accepting all of you—the good, the bad, and the ugly—that right there is real talk. You have to accept all of it. If you don't accept all of it, you can't accept any of it.
Right. There's this book I wrote in 2013 called What Happens to Them When You Change. And when I started writing that book, I had several moments where I wanted to just pause and take a break writing it, because it was forcing me to accept everything about myself. And like the Michael Jackson song talks about with the man in the mirror, being able to accept the good, the bad, and the ugly. Being able to accept, see yourself, even if the world is blind, is our tagline for Cage Free Voices. And I wholeheartedly believe in that, being able to see yourself. And sometimes it's not that we have a hard time accepting the ugly or even the bad. Sometimes we have a hard time accepting the good. And I remember listening to Roland Martin this week, and he was saying, why do we have such a hard time telling the truth about the good about ourselves? And oftentimes, and this is me talking now, oftentimes we misinterpret, or, you know, other people misinterpret your confidence for arrogance, but it's just the truth about who you are. Now, the attitude behind it is another thing, but I think sometimes we have a hard time being okay with accepting the truth about the good that's within us. And we'll shy away from compliments, or if somebody says, you look good, you might come back and say, you know, I need to lose some weight. Why couldn't you just take the compliment? There's good. There's a lot of good about you, you know, and being able to accept all of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that part of the reason why it's difficult for some of us to accept compliments, if you will, is there's something, you know, there's that thing inside of us that knows, oh, well, I could work on this, or I need to be better with that, and I need to be, and we're so hard on ourselves that sometimes it's hard for us to take those types of compliments, and it's unfortunate, but, I mean, it's a part of that evolution that we're talking about, you know?
Right. And when we talk about evolution, I would suggest, you know, like, if that is a process you want to start, like, that book that was written in 2013 has helped a lot of people with the process. At the end of each chapter, you're able to make connections between people, even people in history who struggle with some of the same things, accepting themselves, like knowing that Winston Churchill or Dr. Martin Luther King struggled with some of the very things that we struggle with today in our individual lives. Sometimes we think, you know, like, the greats didn't deal with this stuff. And then we assume that we're not great because we're dealing with those things. But you're able to be this holistic person, this person who is, like my sis Sherry said, I can be this and that. I can be a minister and struggling with this, you know, accepting all of that, because the fact of the matter is, there, you know, if we read the Bible, we'll note that all of these people, all the characters discussed in it, had good, bad, and ugly, you know, and accepting all of that is vital.
Absolutely true. I mean, and I would say, I know this segment is about accepting self, but not just accepting self, but I think we alluded to it a little bit earlier, but I think it's worth repeating. Accepting our circumstances, accepting where we are in our life right at this moment in time, as opposed to always looking to escape our circumstances. Sometimes we have to live in that moment and take it all in, so that we can fully appreciate it one way or the other.
Absolutely. I remember saying that to some friends of mine when I was really going through that. I want to experience every one of these emotions I'm supposed to experience so I can remember what it felt like to be in that space and never want to go back there again. So I won't go back there again.
Absolutely true. And I mean, my mantra to some people over the past few years has been, sometimes you got to feel something. You can't just gloss over everything. You just can't wish it away or do other things to try to numb certain things away. Sometimes you got to feel some things in order for you not to ever want to experience those things ever again.
And that's the only way that you'll know you're alive. Is when you feel every emotion, when your back is up against the wall and you have no other choice but to rise up, then you find out more about yourself in those situations where you feel like you don't want to experience those emotions. When you allow yourself to do that and you accept where you are, then you'll see a higher version of yourself rise to the occasion.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. A lot of wisdom during this segment, Bathsheba Smithen. Bathsheba Smithen is the co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment. She's a lyricist, educator, recording artist, and motivational speaker. You got anything coming up anytime soon, Bathsheba?
Yes, I do. I actually have an event at Impact Hub DC on August 30th. I'll be providing more details on our website, cagefreevoices.com. It is the Cage Free Voices of Impact series that's getting ready to get started, where we'll have youth showcasing their talents, but also talking about social social, economic, educational issues in their performance.
Okay, very good. Bathsheba Smith, and again, co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment. Bathsheba, thank you so much, sis. We appreciate you as always.
Thank you so much, Sean.
And that is it for us. That is it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yoes, associate producer Yorio Digizua. Our board operators are Andre Melton and Ty Rice. First Edition interns are Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, Kristen West, Alex Blanc, and Valentin Davis. Stay tuned for Keep It Moving with Marsha Jews next, right here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I am Sean Yoes. Peace. I just want to.